Hello. Welcome to Get a Better Handle on Life. I'm Barry Winbolt, and this is my podcast.
Behind it is always this idea that don't just let the money be the driver. You know, what can you do? And wildlife and nature are really important for me. And I just want to make sure that they flourish.
That's the voice of Tim Bullen. He transformed his life by making his love of wildlife and nature into a business. He explains how he did that and the huge range of benefits to himself, his family, and the people who visit the secret campsite. So what is that?
Well, the secret campsite is, it is exactly as it says, it's a campsite, and it's aimed at connecting people with the natural world. Most of the people who come here are coming during weekends and the school holidays, and they're coming with their family, a few friends, to push back a bit and just to say, let's put down all of the technology. Let's let our senses enjoy some time together around a campfire, cooking over a campfire, chatting, going for walks through the countryside. We run the site really quite carefully. We don't have any groups, so we limit the number of people that can come as part of a group. We don't have any dogs at all on the site. We don't let people play any music, whether that's acoustic music or radio music. And we don't have any cars in the camping areas. And the idea is everything is focused on creating a better space for wildlife and for that to flourish. So the pictures are big, they're spread out, and in between we let the wildlife grow. So we've got lots of shrubs and trees in between each of the pictures.
Okay, so that's the environment, a place where nature can flourish. And part of that nature, of course, is the people. Do they flourish when they come?
I think they must do, because so many people come back year after year. They know the pitches that they want to be on. Not everybody wants to go to the same pitch, but lots of people request it when they book. So they book quite early because they know that we'll probably get booked up in the summer weekends. So, yeah, the people, I think, really do flourish. The opportunity for them to actually put down the day-to-day stuff is really, it doesn't happen very often in life. You know, you think you're going to have some time off at the weekend, but there's always a job to do. Whereas when you get to the campsite, you're really left to do your thing. Everything we do here is done on a kind of honesty system. So we sell firewood. We've got a little shop that we sell teas and coffees and licorice ice lollies, and just a place where people can buy simple things. It's not about, you know, we're not about trying to sell lots of cheap tat rubbish for people. The firewood we sell, people write up on a board how many bags they've had. We run a tab and then they pay when they check out at the end of their trip. For me, if you can create an ethos where you trust people and you give them space, they can get to enjoy all of the natural world. There's so much to see. We've got a team of astronomers who come and spend time with us at the site, and they set up their telescopes or their sunscopes. They're enthusiasts and they love the opportunity to chat to people who are camping with us here. I think the people who come, I think they flourish.
I'm sure. The astronomers, is that because there's less light pollution where you are?
Yeah, we're really lucky here. When you look on a Google map, you can see that for the southeast of England, we're in a pretty good spot. We're between Lewes, Barkham, Chailey and Newark. And we're surrounded by ancient woodland. And the camping meadow is a space that we've managed in a way that we create lots of different habitat there. But the fact that we're quite remote, relatively, I mean, the nearest, Lewes is 5 miles to the south, Newark is about 2 or 3 miles to the north, but it really is dark skies, relative for the south of England. So, yeah, you get amazing views.
What initially sparked this passion for nature? I mean, tell me about something about, you know, you and how you came to be doing what you're doing. I think you said you founded the business 6 years ago.
No, we started the business in 2012. That's when the campsite first opened. Prior to that, I grew up down in Wiltshire, studied for a degree in agriculture at Aberystwyth University, spent a year on a farm prior to going there. And I've always had a really big interest in farming. I used to keep chickens when I was younger. And sheep. farming and the wildlife that was in and around the area where I grew up. Did my degree, left university, and then found myself trying to decide what I was going to do next. Ended up working in advertising, of all things, and set up my own media business, which I ran for probably 15 years. But we, by this point, and that was all based in London, by this point, we'd left London, moved down to Sussex. And we were living next door to what was an old garden centre. And when the two daughters of the founder of that decided they wanted to sell, they asked me, and I thought, I regret everything if I don't try this. There's this great opportunity next door to us. So that was the real driver for me, was, you know, we had this space where we could actually, we could start to explore and see how we could develop our passion for wildlife.
So you went from somebody running their own business to somebody literally stepping into a plot of land that had been neglected for some time. What next? Where do you start?
Well, it hadn't really been neglected. It's just that it was just a bit run down. It wasn't in terrible state, but the field where most of the camping takes place, that was just looking, it was not really very well manicured. And that was the real key to it. And one of the drivers for me was this moment. We used to have friends over camping every summer. And one day, one of the children found a grass snake in the compost heap. And we also started to see all these little glowworms with the children. You know, and I knew there were glowworms there, but it's when you get the magic of children discovering something like that, a snake or a glowworm, suddenly you realize there's a passion there that, and these are children who lived in the village, many of whom hadn't seen. So, you know, a few things, a little light bulb goes off in your head and you think, here's an opportunity. We weren't really sure what we were going to do with the site, the old garden centre. You know, we closed it down probably about 18 months after we had bought it, because it was just it wasn't in a good condition to run as a business. Trying to retail from where we are wasn't a good idea. For me, that it was that light bulb moment when these children were suddenly realizing what was there, and you start talking about it almost blasé because you know it's there, but they don't. So yeah, that was a great opportunity to see what can we do with this, and we could do something quite fun.
You're listening to Spotlight on Business. I'm in conversation with Tim Bullen, co-founder of The Secret Campsite near Lewes. So you make it sound, I mean, I speak to lots of entrepreneurs, obviously, and they're doing exactly what you do. They do exactly what you do, which is from their position of expertise and experience, they explain it very eloquently. But just like, well, this is something you do, isn't it? But it must have been a huge challenge. I mean, if I was listening to you not having had a little discussion beforehand, I'd think, well, where did the money come from? How did they? One day they had income, next day they must have done something where it was a complete new start. Was that the way it went?
Well, I had a pool of money. I'd sold the business, so I had some money available. But obviously, there's there's other things that you need to do with that money. Yeah, you've got housing, mortgages, and things to do. But what we decided to do was to invest that money into the site. And so we had this site which we owned, but there wasn't a lot of cash flow still there. So I basically apportioned a chunk of that and just said, okay, this is it. This is the last bit we've got, and we need to make this work. So it was a bit of a, I'd put it down as a fast ride, because we had to develop the shower block. We had to renovate one of the old buildings and make that into a shower block. And we had to put up some of the other facilities that you need. So the first few years they were tough. You know, you eat a bit less. For me, it was a tough start to get going, and we had to try and work out how we marketed the proposition. But it was fun, and you know, and you've got your family. I was spending much more time with my family, which was a great thing. Something I really enjoyed.
And I guess your children were quite involved as the thing grew. They were quite young when you started.
Yeah, they were quite young. I think the oldest one was probably 12 and was just about to start secondary school. And the youngest probably 7, but they've always been involved. I mean, they set up something called the Secret Teapot, which was a little cafe, takeaway cafe, that they sold teas and coffees and hot chocolates. But I lent them some money to buy a machine. But I said to them that, you know, you can run this and you see what money you can make. And it was a great experience for them to be involved in. Really, I guess it's the idea that they're setting up their own little business.
Well, and a tremendous kind of education, really, because you don't get that anywhere else. And to be given that responsibility, and it is just that, it's entrepreneurship from a very young age, isn't it?
Yeah, and they did, and they paid me all the money back, and they sold a lot of teas and coffees that first year that they did it. So it was, you know, maybe it was a slightly false example of running a business, because sometimes it can be very hard in the first year. Theirs worked really well, really quickly.
Yes.
It was lots of fun. We had one hilarious moment with, we run a little festival here called the Secret Wildlife Festival, which we used to run with Sussex Wildlife Trust. And on one of the years we were doing that, they were selling their drinks at, I think it was like 80p or something. They decided that actually they got the pricing completely wrong, which they didn't realize, but one of the guests did. So pricing plans for kids was that was quite interesting, having a discussion with them about how you set the price for a product. The youngest one said to me, he said, "Dad, we've lowered the price. We've sold loads more. It's brilliant." And I said, "Now you're making a loss."
Yes.
So it was fun. It was great. And that's how you learn. You know, you make mistakes, and lots of fun.
Yeah. But also, you know, from a developmental perspective, they have something they are responsible for, which is, I know you're behind them in that, but I have a friend who was a farmer's son. And at the age of 14 or something, he decided he wanted to keep rare breed sheep. So his dad bought him a small flock, like 6 sheep or something like that. But from there on, he was on his own. And he built quite a business out of it until he was about 18. And then he moved on and went into something totally unrelated. But, you know, it's interesting how kids pick up stuff if they're given the opportunity to do it out in the real world, so to speak, but in a protected way.
And I think it's that idea that life is it's a series of chapters. It's not one journey that has no deviations. So doing some things like that is great. I think some of the you know, they didn't all love the idea of running a little business, but some of them really loved it. So I think it's great if you can give. It's about opening doors for children. That's my thing, and that's where the campsite is so great. And one of the joys of the little festival we run is, suddenly children are starting to see things that they would never otherwise see.
Yes.
And they do that with someone who's expert alongside them.
What time of year do you run the festival?
The festival's at the end of June, so the 28th to the 30th of June. The tickets sell out as soon as they go on sale. It's become quite popular. We had to stop it during COVID. The pandemic meant that we couldn't run it, but we've relaunched it this year. And this year we're also relaunching some other areas where we're trying to get business people connected with nature. You know, when you run a campsite, one of the interesting things is that weekends and holiday nights, we're full up and we're really busy. But then midweek during the summer, we might be, during term time, we might be completely empty here. So we've been sort of venturing into ways that we can also start to get a different audience of people connected. And I think it's a really important audience to understand about nature and wildlife.
Yes. Well, I was very impressed by that when you told me, when we had our preliminary sort of chat. And I'd like to come back to that later, because that was part of my world, which was corporate training and bringing people out of the office environment and creating all sorts of opportunities. Not a lot different, actually, from what we would all be doing in our spare time, given the opportunity. I'll come back to that in a minute. One of the things that I wonder about is, you know, this interface between business and wildlife, and balancing the tranquility of the environment with running a business. I mean, that can be challenging. So how do you navigate this difference effectively? I mean, one of the things I'm thinking about, for example, is, or wondering about, people come down, and, you know, from the big city or wherever, and they think, oh, yeah, it'd be lovely, and for their first experience. And then they find they're going to be deprived of a lot of the things that they actually take for granted. And it's a lot different when somebody says to you, well, no, you can't have the radio on, or no, you can't bring your animals or whatever. So how do you navigate that that sort of rule-based idea without it sounding too restrictive? Or don't you have to?
No, you don't really have to. I mean, I think what's really interesting is quite often people arrive on a Friday evening for their weekend's camping trip. And they quite often get out of the cars and they're all a little bit, they're a bit worn out. They're a bit hardwired because they've been busy during the week. The kids have been in a car for an hour and a half. So everyone starts by getting out and looking a bit, you know, bit like they're caught in the headlights a little. But within, I don't know, half an hour of starting to wheel their items over to their pitch, people start to, you can see they start to decompress. Everyone starts walking back and they're walking back with a smile on their face. When people are staying with us, we make sure we get everyone's name and write it up on the board. So each pitch is named and the people who are staying on that pitch, we've got all of their names. And just that opening introduction where you explain to them that the wood's on an honesty system and that you've shown interest in the fact that you want to know who they are and you start a conversation straight away with these people. So I'm now very familiar with what names are in are most likely to be used, or what are on trend names and which names do you never hear. We don't get very many Nigels or Derricks staying with us because the little kids are not called Nigel and Derrick anymore, you know. And it's quite funny, but if you show interest in people, then they're interested. And I think it's always been a really quite a straightforward thing. There's always going to be a child who wants to sit on their Xbox or sit on their phone and do that. But it's amazing how many phones we've got charging in reception, which I think is tantamount to the fact that people are quite happy to put them down and let them not disturb their peace and quiet.
You're listening to Get a Better Handle on Life. I'm in conversation with co-founder of The Secret Campsite, Tim Bullen. He's about to reveal why his business welcomes gate crashers. So in a few words, how do you believe connecting with nature enhances the overall camping experience for your visitors? And I'll qualify that because one might think, I mean, I've been to campsites in lots of places in my time, and we're always kind of, to some extent, connected with nature, and it's a much simpler type of life. So how do you qualify? What's your USP, shall I say? Let's put it that way.
I think most campsites are, and I always have this slightly amusing analogy, which is that going to a campsite is often like going to a housing estate in a field. And you've got cars driving around, people playing music, big groups, the tents are all crammed together. So, you know, you put your tent up and you wake up in the morning and there's three tents right next to you. For us, the difference is it's nature, it's peace and it's space. And for me, it's giving people a big pitch, keeping those pitches really spread out and letting things grow in between. And actually saying to people, put down the everyday items and, you know, don't, no music. So there's no music over in the meadow. The music is the dawn chorus. The music is the owls hooting at night, or the deer rut in the autumn when the stags are establishing their territories. So that sound, it's that connection with nature. And it is unbelievable how many people really, really appreciate that when they stay. And it's not always something they expected when they came to stay with us. So I think for me, it's really easy, and I think many people have it instinctively in them that they want to enjoy those sounds.
Okay, so coming on to the business kind of location and terrain, you've told us where it is. Roughly, can you give us some sense of the total area of the terrain that you cover?
Yeah, the site is about 8 acres, and it's split in two by the dismantled Bluebell Railway. So that splits the site in two and is an amazing wildlife corridor because it's managed by UK Power Networks for the power lines that go along it. But it means it's a very low management regime there. So we're really lucky with that because there's lots of things. And I'll tell you more about those in a moment. But yeah, the site is eight acres in total. And that is surrounded by ancient woodland on the far side of the railway track. And on this side, there's a few buildings which are occupied by some teams of ecologists, which are a great asset to the site. And then we've got a very large barn, which is used for storage.
Why are the ecologists there? Are they permanent residents?
Yeah, the ecologists have got offices. There's two teams of ecologists, and they are based at the site, I think really because it's a good space for them to be. It's a good office space. But the upside is that it's a site that's just, I mean, we are filled with wildlife. We've got adders, we've got great crested newts, dormice. There's nightingales that sing along the railway track in the spring, so they'll be arriving soon. And so these species that we've got are, in some cases, quite rare, and in all cases, becoming more and more endangered. So for the ecologists to be able to walk out at lunchtime and go and explore spaces that are very relevant to the work they do is probably quite a nice thing if you're an ecologist.
Yeah, I can see the value of people having the immediacy and the contact of being in touch with things they would never be able to experience in any other way. Because you don't see a newt in a zoo.
No, you don't. And you're probably, there's quite a strong chance you won't see the newts here either. And some of them, which are endangered, great crested newts, you're not allowed to touch unless you have a license for it. But there are lots of creatures that you will see. I mean, we've got boards over in the meadow where you'll be able to lift the board or a piece of roofing sheet, and you'll be able to see underneath there. There'll be snakes under there, slow worms, lizards. That, for a lot of children, is quite a surprising encounter, just like the glowworms are in the end of June, July and August, when you're walking around when it's pitch black and you just see this tiny little glowing light coming from the long grass. And when you inspect it closer, you see that it's the female glowworm. And the reason she glows is so that she can attract males who are flying around. They're winged. She's not. So for a child to see those types of things is you're exactly right. It's magical. The bats, we're surrounded by woodland, and the woodland's amazing for a whole host of different bats. And I'm not expert on wildlife, but I'm enthusiastic about it. But there's lots of different species of bats in our woodland. And those will be flying around your tent at night. You know, some people find that a bit creepy, but they're there. They're part of our wildlife. And for many people, it's an amazing thing to have bats flying around while you're sitting around a little campfire chatting to your son or your wife, or that, for me, that's when we've created the right environment for people.
Absolutely. It's a coexistence in action, isn't it, really?
Totally, yeah.
Beyond that's just happening. People are there, wildlife's going on around them. Do you encourage engagement in any way? I mean, you mentioned lifting up pieces of wood, corrugated iron, whatever. Which some of us did as kids, many people won't have done. So another great experience. What other ways do you encourage interaction with nature?
Well, we've got, we have quite a lot of bird boxes up, so we can talk, about the bird boxes and what's in those and what's using those. There's also something called the FSC, which are the Field Stewardship Council, and they provide lots of different spotter sheets. So I've got quite a few of these, probably 50 odd of these FSC sheets, which children just come over and borrow, so they can go and look at grasshoppers, they can go and look for ladybirds, they can go and look at different types of moths or butterflies. So that's a really big part. Lots of children will come and borrow the FSC sheets and go and do some exploring with them. It might be animal tracks or dung or whatever whatever owl pellets we get. Sometimes When we run a wildlife festival, and the wildlife festival, the Secret Wildlife Festival, is a brilliant opportunity for children to really get under the skin of things. So, we're setting up trail cameras, we're setting up mammal and moth traps so that we can see what animals we can catch. They're all completely humane. Nothing gets injured or damaged during these. So the engagement part is a really big part of all of this. For me, if you can get a child seeing and touching or smelling, using their senses with nature, it probably stays with them for life, just like the newts that you saw as a child in those brickyard ponds. And I think it's not difficult to do. This is the thing. This wildlife is all around. it's a bit, I always think of the campsite a bit like a, it's a bit like a sort of party where there's a whole load of gatecrashers waiting on the outside who want to come into your party. And actually, we've tried to create the campsite as a space where they're all invited in. And so we've got this place filled with wildlife. But so many environments, you know, particularly gardens, are kept very sterile, and we sort of keep all the wildlife out so we don't encounter it. Whereas here, we try to encourage the wildlife in so that people will encounter it and give them the ways to understand it better.
Do you find that, I mean, I'm wondering about the timidity of some of the animals and whether they kind of accept the presence of people, or have you noticed a change over time, or is there anything noteworthy about that? Or is it just, I mean, here you are, it's a very quiet, tranquil place, and there are times when there are lots of people around and times when there aren't. Is there a difference in how the animals appear or behave during those times when there are more people around?
I think that they all animals are hardwired to be nervous or, you know, fearful of humans. So, no, I think the animals will always they'll always react and disappear as quickly as they can. It's why, you know, people are fearful of an adder. But the reality is that adders will disappear as quickly as they can, way before you've probably even got near them. Where I do notice it is we're closed during the winter, and it's in the wintertime when you're likely to see a barn owl crisscrossing the meadow. It's the wintertime when the deer are much more obvious in and around the buildings and around the camping areas. So I would say, yes, the animals may be more acclimatized, but they are always still fearful. It's only young rabbits, the little baby rabbits are the ones that doesn't, you know, at the time of year they're about, you can almost get up and touch a baby rabbit before they realise they should probably run off. Mm. Those are the ones that often don't last for very long, I suspect.
Yes, I guess. You're very keen, obviously, on encouraging children to engage with nature. And you mentioned that weekends are the busy times and that kind of the week is a bit quieter. Do you engage with any schools locally?
We haven't done much school work. And it's one of the things that actually we'll probably try to develop alongside the thing I alluded to earlier. So there are opportunities to do things with the schools. So far, that's just been, we've had children from the secondary school come and do work experience here. So they come and spend a week with us learning. They don't really learn how to run a campsite, but they learn the jobs that go on in and around a campsite and reception. So we haven't done any school groups yet, but I think it's an area that it would be fun to explore.
Yes, and it's a great opportunity for children. And later on, I'd like to come on to mental health. That seems to me to be a fascinating topic to explore, particularly these days when we are less and less able to access. In other words, we have to look after ourselves, our own mental health and well-being, because the resources are more restricted than they ever were. And yeah, there's a great deal of ignorance about that as well and what's available. So I'd like to touch on that. This is the Get a Better Handle on Life podcast. I'm talking to Tim Bullen, who owns the secret campsite hidden deep in the Sussex countryside. Coming up, ecotherapy and possibly a new business model. Can you tell me a bit about the accommodation? You've got pitches, yeah, and also you've got some accommodation you provide yourselves.
Yeah, so we've got 21 pitches in total, 18 of which are straightforward camping pitches, and then three of them are a little bit different. We used to, before one of the teams of ecologists was on site, we had a company here called Tree Tents, and unsurprisingly, tree tents make tree tents. And so we've got a tree tent, which is a bit like a little dormouse, a spherical dormouse nest up in the trees, which is hugely popular, and people can stay in that. It's got three single beds. Used to have a wood burner, but we took the wood burner out because we're only open during the summer season, you know, from March through till the end of October. So you don't really need a wood burner for most of that time. And it was always a problem because people never knew how to light a wood burner, and they'd light it and then they'd come down and say, it's just too hot with the wood burner on. So we took the wood burner out and put another bed in. So we've got the tree tent. We've also got two other structures. One's the grid shell, which is just a really beautiful, spacious canvas structure made from steam bent ash. And it's very strong because it's a sort of lattice of ash strips. And then the final structure we've got is called the ochre, which is a kind of pentagon shape, which is very well designed because it means that, you know, most sheds end up being a bit restricted, whereas at the height that you want it to be a bit more spacious, whereas this being a pentagon is brilliant. And got a couple of double beds in there, and people bring all of their own bedding. You know, they're shelters. It's not like a glamping proposition in the same way. People bring their all of the things they're going to need. We don't provide bedding. You know, we literally say to them, bring, if you want a pillow, bring a pillow.
Okay.
And that's kind of the ethos of the whole site, which is less is more, really.
Absolutely.
When we wrote our little book, The Escapee's Handbook, it was all about, the whole theory of that was about nothing much. There's nothing much here until you start exploring. And then you see that it's just filled with things. There's stuff everywhere.
So The Escapee's Handbook, I hadn't come across that. Is something that you give to your guests, or do you sell it on Amazon or whatever?
Well, we used to sell it, but now we created a PDF, so it's a download, so people can download it. I've still got some paper copies here, which people have. But it's the whole idea was, it was about your senses and how your senses can interact you with nature. So there's bits about taste, there's bits about smell, how do you see a sit spot? I don't know if you've ever encountered a sit spot, but the idea that if you want to see wildlife, most people take their dog for a walk and say, I didn't see anything the whole time I was out on my walk. And you say to them, well, first up, the dog would have scared everything off. But secondly, you'd have scared everything off. Sometimes if you want to see wildlife, just go and find somewhere quiet and sit still. And if you're there for 20 minutes, half an hour, things start to appear because you no longer seem like a threat. You're suddenly part of the landscape. And so things will come out, the deer will come out, the birds start doing, and things will hop around. You know, you'll suddenly see all these little creatures. So I think that's a good way of showing people if you use your senses, you'll suddenly realize there's so much there.
Well, that last little bit of advice that you've just given us, it's really, seems to me from listening to you, that that's what the secret campsite is all about. You've managed to create a spot where people can come, be quiet, and let nature happen around them.
Totally.
So we've touched on the benefits to well-being that your business can provide. Can we dip into that a little bit more? It's now established that ecotherapy, being outdoors and active in a green environment, is a way of boosting mental well-being. And you've alluded to it yourself. I mean, obviously you benefit from that and your family benefits from that. Do you have any plans to sort of open that up to the community in any way, or is that just incidental to what you do?
No, we've got, we know there's a big issue going on in the world with the environment. And one of the things we've been looking to do is to get businesses into a nature situation. And I can see that there's a really great opportunity for businesses. You know, if you imagine a lot of businesses now, there's a lot of remote workers who never see each other. They talk over the phone, or they might email each other or message, but they don't spend any quality time together. So we've developed a proposition called 24 Hours in Nature, but it doesn't have to be 24 hours. It can be all sorts of different things. It's about getting people who would otherwise be talking to each other in a commercial environment, getting them away from that and putting them into a space where they can connect with each other. Actually, just chat to each other. It may be nothing to do with the work that they do. And getting people to be inspired in a way by what goes on in the natural world. So we've got a guide who will take them on a bat walk, who will take them for a walk through the woodlands and let their minds wander, but also in a kind of guided way, so that they're going to come back to a meal, and they're going to come back to a place where they can sleep and spend the night. But trying to free their normal environment. You know, if you have a business meeting, it's normally in a conference center. It might be down the pub after work. You know, people, that's where they socialize. And we're saying, just do it in a completely different environment. No alcohol. Provide vegetarian meals for people. Make things different and make things, I think it makes people think just differently. So I think that's good for businesses, but I suspect that there's going to be a huge uplift in the opportunities for people's mental health. I think it's going to be a great opportunity to do things there.
Yeah, well, that's certainly what we found in something I was involved in. And that was that when you bring people together in that environment, change happens and they make it happen. You don't actually have to do much. You just put them in the environment. As you say, they're comfortable, they're warm, they're fed. They've got a few things to do. They get a guided tour, whatever it is. They've got knowledge around them in the people who work, who can explain things to them. But actually, they do the work and it's hugely beneficial.
Yeah, we had one team from a very big company, and this was totally by accident. But the guy who booked it, he just said, I just want to get my team away from the office. He didn't want anyone to give them any guidance. He didn't want anything instructive. He just wanted to get his team of 12 people away from their normal environment, where they could spend two nights cooking, walking to a pub where they ate food together, cooking in the evenings around a campfire, waking up in the morning and preparing breakfast for each other, but just a different space. And he said that it was the most valuable work trip that they had been on, because people who, you lose a hierarchy in things like this. You lose that, oh, he's the boss, he's the one, or she's the one who makes all the decisions on those sorts of things. That changes when you put people into a different environment. And I think that's a really healthy way of encouraging the quiet person who maybe doesn't want to speak out, or the new person who feels a bit intimidated by everyone else. They're put, you even everything out a bit, and suddenly I think you can tap into people's latent skills that they've got.
So you've got a really, it sounds like a really well-developed business. It's got form, it's got structure, it's got customers, you've got an ethos, everything is there. In traditional terms, businesses are meant to grow and expand, but you seem to be following a different path.
I used to run a media business in London, and it was great, but the measure of success there was how much money did we make? And I found that quite shallow. And whenever you made an amount of money, you always felt that, you know, if you said, how much is enough for me? Just before you reach that target, you raise the bar and you try to make it bigger. And I found that a really disappointing way of living, because actually what you forget is you forget the people that you work with, you forget the environment. And there's something called the B Corporation movement, which I think is a brilliant opportunity to start thinking about business and the way that we do business just differently. It's all about running a business in a way that isn't just about the person who owns the shares in it. You know, for the last 12 years, we've been trying to do exactly that here. We pay more than most of the other local employers, because that means you get a better choice of people to choose from. And they're more enthusiastic to come and work for you, I think. We could make lots more money if we put more pitches into the campsite. There's lots of space for it, but that would compromise the wildlife. So actually having measures of success that are different to just money sits very comfortably with me. There's times when you have to order a slightly cheaper meal at the pub. Or you decide that your holiday is going to be a cheaper holiday, when you think, oh, God, I charged a bit more, or did it in this way, or had a few more customers. But actually, you know, deep down, I really love it. I love the fact that, you know, the principles are what drive the business, not money.
So what are your measures of success?
I think the measures of success for me would be how many people we can get to connect with nature and the natural world. Some of those will end up being financial successes. But you can make donations to things. You can work with partners. I'd rather be paying the people that we partner with a better price for what they provide than
you
just
mean
sitting there.
Local suppliers in the community.
Yeah, local suppliers in the community. People in and around where we are who have similar values. You know, I'm not about, you know, we built a new wash house at the campsite, and one of the things that we decided when we decided to build the wash house, we wanted to build it in a way that made it really long-term, forward-looking. So we got rid of the concrete. We decided that we would use a tree to do all the floorboards. We decided to install a rainwater harvesting system that flushes all of the toilets. All of the walls and roofs were made from recycled roofing material. Everything we did was about trying to use up what we had and also to minimize the need to ship in lots of new things. Rather than the concrete foundations, we used telegraph poles, but we had to go through a quite long-winded process to proved that these telegraph poles wouldn't off gas if they were treated with a certain type of paint. It costs lots more to do all of those things. But, you know, I look at that and I think we've built something that I feel really proud of. And when campers come and stay with us, they look at the wash house. They say, this is extraordinary. You know, we could have put 6 or 8 toilets in. We put 4 in. We tried to make it all spacious. That reflects the way the campsite, the ethos of the campsite. But it also, I think it says to people, yeah, this is, let's not try and cram everything. Let's not try and just make more. It makes you sleep much more easily and feel much more proud of what you've produced. I totally get it. Some people, you know, how much money's in the bank this week? And I still have to look at that and make sure that, you know, we're doing all right. But that's not the main driver.
And you've got plans for the future, or is it more of the same and just keep it comfortable?
There's lots of opportunities that we could develop. The business, getting businesses into nature with small teams is a real focus for this year. That's a great opportunity. But, you know, there's opportunities. There's a few years ago, I set up a franchise proposition, which I never developed, but I did all the behind the scenes work for it. My mind is full of ideas. I'm always thinking about, you know, new ways to extend it. But they're always behind it. It's always this idea that don't just let the money be the driver. You know, what can you do? And wildlife and nature are really important for me. And I, you know, I just want to make sure that they flourish.
What makes you proudest in your journey? Or what has been your proudest moment?
My proudest moment? I think it's yet to come. I think I'm always looking for a new thing to be doing. So I feel proud about the fact that we built the washhouse last year. But, do you know, I'm thinking about, okay, how am I going to make this business thing work next year? And then I'll be proud when I've done that. But it will be a short-term proud because I'll be thinking about where are we going to... Can we open another one somewhere?
Yes.
Can we get another secret campsite up and running? Or can we start to work with people like you talked about, the therapies, those ways of getting people to see the benefits of nature for them personally?
Yes.
So proud, it's just kind of, well, proud's a bit short-term for me. I'm not about a legacy. I think I'm about continually looking for new opportunities to do things.
Yeah. Well, Tim, you've very eloquently described the whole business. I've loved the conversation. I thank you so much for your time. And
thank you. I've enjoyed it too.
I wish you every success with whatever happens. I can see the short term, that's connection with business, but I'm sure that once that mountain has been climbed, there'll be others in the range that you are eager to tackle. Tim Bullen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. Thanks for Tim for sharing all of that. You can find out more about this unusual business at thesecretcampsite.co.uk. There's a link in the show notes. You've been listening to Get a Better Handle on Life. I'm Barry Winbolt, and this is my podcast. Please consider subscribing. I publish new episodes weekly. So until next time, goodbye.